that will further promote the spread of HIV/AIDS. As an example, in a publication in parentheses, which incidentally indicates it was funded by the Minnesota Department of Health, titled "The Bare Facts on Barebacking," one of the headings is "Why Blank Raw." And this is what Senator Hottinger read after that. "Tell me, Ms. Teal, do you believe this is frank and open talk about sex?" That is what I was trying to refer to earlier when I asked Ms. Teal to come see me and explain this. Instead, we're trying to address a health issue, not lifestyle. This is about health.
Well, I think there will be differences of opinion, and that's okay. I want to be sure, I'm sorry, but Senator Hottinger?
No, I think it should be pointed out that the use of perverted was not necessary in any way to accomplish what Representative Emery claims he was trying to accomplish.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hottinger, with all due respect, there are many folks within the gay and lesbian community that would disagree that this is how this message needs to be delivered, and I think that's what we all need to understand if we're talking about health. While I respect someone's right to disagree with what this language intends, we can only tell you from our heart why we're doing or why we've proposed what we have, and I think the facts speak for themselves.
Senator Bergman suggested an opportunity for someone to respond, and I would welcome that opportunity at this point if there is somebody who would like to come forward. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Dickinson, and I'm the Community Affairs Manager at the Minnesota AIDS Project. I'd be happy to answer some general questions, and I'd like to just make a couple of statements, but I would love for the opportunity to invite our Executive Director, Lorraine Teal, to be able to come here at a future date to be able to address some of the specifics of what Representative Emmer has alleged today. I hope that will be appropriate and welcome for this committee.
I think, depending on who has a chair, I think we'd welcome that opportunity.
Terrific. Thank you so much. The first thing I'd like to say is that the materials that Representative Emmer finds objectionable on the Pride Alive website actually receive no public funding. They're all privately funded. So I think that's the first thing that needs to be said. The second thing is that the Pride Alive website is aimed at a very specific population, actually a population that is most at risk of contracting HIV and AIDS. And what we know is that that material actually is getting through to folks. So it's not aimed at anyone here, probably. It's aimed at folks who are at the highest risk. And we know from the feedback that we've gotten that the prevention message starts to get through. I know it's a vernacular that not everyone is comfortable with, but it's not aimed at us. It's aimed at the highest risk individuals who are out there. And again, it receives no public funding, and that's really important to know. That's pretty much the sum total of what I'd like to say. And if you want more in-depth information, I could certainly have Ms. Teal here at a future time.
Well, thank you for the offer.
Thank you.
Senator Bergman?
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Dickinson, either today or at a future time, would it be possible for you to provide for us information about what your state funding is used for?
I actually have fact sheets here. I don't know if they're enough for everyone in the committee, but I'd be happy to have them passed out.
Well, why don't we do that, and sure, maybe if there aren't enough, we can get some copies made.
Sure. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And, gentlemen, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Article 2. And in Article 2, I'd like to have someone from the department discuss with us House Section 4, which is a DHS proposal on county retention of Minnesota Care Recoveries.
Section
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Karen Gibson with the Department of Human Services.
As it is, this is currently a housewarming provision, so I think if you can just provide sort of basic information, and if there's any questions, just for information today.
Right.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, in the January 2003 report issued by the Legislative Auditor's Office, one of the concerns they were addressed was that the department needed to perhaps be a bit more aggressive in terms of fraud prevention activities. This proposed language would allow counties who pursue fraud-related activities related to Minnesota Care to recover one-half of the non-federal share for those activities. Currently, there's pretty limited involvement by counties in this because there isn't a whole lot of incentive for them to do that. It's also quite expensive for them to engage in these sorts of activities, so we're not seeing a great deal of effort on their part to try and do this work.
And Ms. Dixon, was this work with the counties? Were the counties in support of this kind of share and their participation in those, program integrity activities?
Mr. Chair, I believe, yes, that the counties are wanting to participate in a greater extent with those sorts of activities, but, again, are facing some funding limitations themselves.
Any questions from Senator Bergman?
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Dickinson, could you just describe what kind of fraud activities you would be talking about in regard to this item?
Ms. Dickinson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the activities are related to mostly applicant or recipient fraud, where they have failed to report a change that would have resulted in ineligibility for Minnesota Care. So it's those kinds of things. We have one staff person currently dedicated to dealing with those sorts of reports, and have that individual has gotten some voluntary repayments, so it would basically be related to recipient fraud.
And
Senator Bergman?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Dickinson, would this be in counties that are doing Minnesota Care eligibility, or would it be in all counties?
Ms. Dickinson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bergman, we believe it would primarily be in the counties that are currently administering Minnesota Care.
Any further questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next section would be, what we're going to do is have a department. There's at least a couple of sections dealing with special transportation. I think that both the House and the Senate have responded to concerns in the marketplace, and the primary sections would be Senate Section 24 and House Section 35. I believe there's another related section later on in this article, but if we could have the department... Mr. Chairman, are you going to walk us through sort of the comparison? I'm sorry, yeah. At least for members' sake, I think we can sort of follow the sections, and I thought it might be helpful for us to have an explanation of the sections, and then I think Ms. Cote is available for his questions. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair and members, the first section is on page 15 of the comparison summary. This is Senate Section 24 and House Section 35, dealing with reimbursement for special transportation costs. The difference is that both the House and Senate increased the rates for the services provided to persons who need a stretcher-accessible vehicle. The difference would be that the Senate would also reduces rates for wheelchair-accessible and non-wheelchair-accessible vans. Mr. Chair, then the next section is on page 31 of the comparison summary. This is Senate Section 52 and House Section 79. This relates to the use of a broker to manage special transportation services. The Senate would extend the use of a broker for 1 year until July 1 of 06 for all recipients. And the Senate extends the prohibition for 1 year but applies this just to nursing home recipients. And then there's a technical difference where the House eliminates some obsolete language.
And if I recall, I believe the House position is relatively budget neutral. And Lipton and Paul, you probably recall that. Is that a fair statement?
I'm sorry, I'm just sitting down again. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, Lipton and Paul, I believe that the combined effect of the House special transportation initiatives are relatively budget neutral.
They are budget neutral.
Okay, budget neutral. And then I believe the Senate, I think there's an extension of prohibition. It's the rate reductions are more broadly applied in the Senate. And there's, I believe, some, I don't know, Senator Bergman, is it 400,000 or something to that effect in the Senate room?
$240,000 to the good. Obviously, the idea was to try to get a budget-neutral proposal. It's kind of hard to hit it right on the nose. So.
Yeah. Well, Senator Bergman, my sense is that we're both sort of on a general same track, and I just sort of wanted to remind us of where we might be. I'm told that the industry sort of viewed the Senate as maybe overshooting the intention of being neutral. And I'm not sure if there's anything more. Ms. Cota is available if there's any questions. We'll meet somewhere along the way to sort of figure out what the best combination, and certainly at least I'm open to maybe it'd be sort of like this. I don't know how to read for sure. I'm told that the rate reductions more across the board become now, as it been looked at by the industry, as being problematic for them. They could handle I guess it would be kind of the ambulance alternative, but that the rest of it might be more of a problem. And I don't know if there's been conversations, Senator Bergman, to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we haven't had any indication that our position is problematic, and in fact, the language was arrived at with a Senate author and the industry. So what we've heard is that it's more than stretcher service that's been problematic in regard to nursing homes, that people have been left sitting and waiting without a ride, or, you know, have been taken someplace and never brought back. So it goes beyond just the stretcher service aspect of the nursing home transportation. And we've heard both from families as well as nursing homes about these problems.
And I think we've heard the same thing, although I would say, and Representative Powell can probably speak, as we've begun to dig under it, I think at least in some measure part of the problem was a significant underestimate of the amount of activity that there would be, and any vendor who's going to have to handle a situation where the volume is significantly greater. But that's history, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't solve the problem. But it appeared as though recent history has shown pretty significant improvement in the performance. Senator Solon, I'm sorry, you had your hand up.
Representative Bradley and Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, we did receive a letter from the industry indicating that the Senate position is about 50% shy of their need for wheelchair rates, and that the Senate position had recommended a $16.50 per ride rate, where they are saying that they actually need a $17 per ride rate.
Well, that was,
and that still would allow savings to the state, though.
Mr. Powell, you have your hand up as well?
Well, that's my understanding as well on the rates. I will say that I have the same letter from the industry backing the rate cut. However, I will say they don't represent all the industry, and some of those, at least a couple that are on that list, have since backed off. But I think it would be fair to say that a majority of the providers would like to see this put off for a year and try to, make it fair for them. And I don't want to speak for them, but I think they would say that they would like to have a year for the broker and the department to to see if they can perform better. I think that there's been quite an increase in the performance of the broker here since they've got the number of lines that they have now. They started out at 5 lines, the telephone lines, to answer the phone. Consequently, they weren't answering the phone. They had a lot of dropped calls. And it was basically because the department wasn't able to tell them how many calls to expect. They came in here with 5 lines. They're now up to 21, and we've seen a very dramatic improvement over their call value. The other problem has been on the level of need designation. I think we can expect that those types of problems will occur. I don't know how to quantify those problems right now, though. I think that's one thing. We did approve the advisory board. I think that's one thing that the advisory board ought to be able to take a very close look at, is just exactly what is the extent of the problem on level of need determination. So, as for me, I wish that the providers hadn't gone after the rate cut. I don't know. I told them I don't know when you'll ever get that back with the cost of gas. It's a problem for them, but they must really believe that there's a problem with the broker and that they're willing to give up. Really, I think they gave up maybe $1.5 million in rates just to drive home their opposition to this. And I believe the department, and I think that I think the House is committed to continuing broking this service statewide eventually, because of the savings that we've realized and the increased access to our population. We have had some problem with quality, but I think that problem is getting better over time. So I think the question is that just how far are we going to want to go to try to address the problems, and I'm just not sure how this is going to fall. I don't know if the department wants to speak on this, but I certainly would welcome their participation.
Just gonna, if you could, perhaps you could give us an update. I think that a lot of us were looking at performance that was weeks or months old, and it seems that the recent has changed. So first thing, question would be, what are we seeing in terms of the more recent performance?
Mr. Chair and committee, I think Representative Powell really did summarize it well. The two major problems are the telephones and the quality of the level of need assessments. And the telephone calls have come down to wait times of just minutes. And the level of need done by the nurses is considerably better. The department believes that postponing the broker really doesn't need to happen in any area except nursing home clients, because that's where the difficulty was, and that's the House's position. The Senate position is that the entire brokering for STS should be postponed for a year, and that's why it costs money, because that defeats savings. And I think that the problem area really is the determination of what to do with nursing homes. The cost per trip in the last 10 months has been reduced by 8%, and that's all non-emergency transportation in the Twin Cities. So that's a significant reduction in cost. We think that the best way to look at this is cost per trip with all costs included. There's been a huge uptick in the number of people who are using non-STS, which is good because that means there's better access. And there's been some reduction in the number of people using STS. And that's why some providers don't want the brokering to continue, because it does threaten their slice of the pie. And what we want to take out of their slice of the pie, frankly, are those people who could use a taxi or a bus instead of the expensive STS option. So the department really is committed to the long-term solution, which is a private sector coordinator. And the rate cut is really a short-term solution that buys them another year. And that's all it does. And I think that there's a lot of disagreement from what we hear among STS providers. There's a few large providers who stand to gain the most, I think, from the rate cut, because it protects them from the broker, and that's what they want. Some of the mid-sized and smaller providers are only hurt by the rate cut, and that's why you're getting differing opinions. There's not the STS community is all the way from a PCA who registers his own car as an STS and gets paid to take his client around, up to a multi-million-dollar corporation and everything in between. It's a really kind of a mess in terms of a marketplace.
Senator Berkman?
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Cota, when this was originally proposed by the governor in his budget last biennium, it was also delayed for a year.
Yes.
And the idea was that the department was going to work with the providers and try to establish with them criteria for when a person would be best served by the variety of different types of transportation services. And as far as I can tell, that never happened. We delayed it a year, and then it got implemented just the way the department intended to implement it in the beginning.
Madam Chair and Committee, we had a formal advisory task force and met a number of times and had extensive conversations with the providers about how to do it. Some of those meetings quite raucous. There really was a lot of communication.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Cota, was there ever an agreement on criteria that should be used for people in order to be able to receive the various levels of service?
Ms. Cota?
Madam Chair and Committee, no, there was not that wasn't one of the outcomes.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Cota, again, that was originally what was the goal, and the rate cut that was taken at that time with that goal in mind. It was at that time thought it would be a temporary rate cut, and when the level of service was agreed upon, then that savings would take the place of the rate cut, and none of that ever took place. And so we do see problems with the system as it was rolled out. I don't understand why that couldn't have happened, you know, and if that would have happened, that would have been, you know, well over a year ago that could have gotten resolved then.
Madam Chair and this and committee, I'm sorry. My understanding was that was one of a series of subjects that were going to be discussed, and the providers were quite supportive of having those decisions be a case-by-case determination by a nurse as opposed to it being a non-medical decision. I can assure you that the advisory task force that comes out of the next year will focus almost exclusively on the level of need question, because that, you're right, that has turned out to be a big issue.
Representative Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Berglund, I was part of that process that met a year ago, and we met, I don't know how, several times, many times, and there was quite a freewheeling discussion. Much was agreed upon. Some of the things that there just weren't able to come to agreement. But we got a lot out of that committee, and I believe that the department and the providers came out, and I know I did, came out more educated about what the problems were and how to address them. And I think we're stronger because of that process that was set up then.
Senator Lloyd?
Thank you. I was wondering if Representative Powell could just what things just couldn't be decided. Where was the glitch?
Representative Powell?
Well, to be perfectly frank about it, the glitch is this, is that it was at the very least, the department thought that there was quite a few clients that were taking STS rides that could go by a more appropriate means of transportation, such as common carrier, buses, taxis, volunteer drivers, and such. So consequently, as you move to broker and assign levels of needs and coordinate how all this works, the STS providers were bleeding clients because of that. And they were trying to hold on to market share. And I understand that. But we have to, if we're going to be wise stewards of the public purse, we have to make sure that the job gets done in the most appropriate way. And I think that I always agreed with the department, if it didn't make much sense to take somebody on an expensive STS ride and then have them drive around in their own private vehicle for the rest of the week. You know, those folks can go by taxi or bus. So that's what we did, and we've taken a lot of folks from the STS that were determined to have STS services, and we've down-coded them to what's being called ATS. And again, the providers, naturally enough, having problems with that. And a lot of these providers have gone out of business. A lot of the smaller ones that were really superfluous to what we needed once that we changed how we were doing business have gone out of business. And so there is just this natural butting of heads between what's gone on in the past and where we want to see in the future. And the STS providers are getting squeezed.
Can I just do a follow-up? And I don't care if it's the Representative Paul or Ms. Cota. The pictures that we saw in testimony in the Senate when Senator Higgins' bill was before us were pictures of people, and these were the complaints that I had in my mind. There were people who probably weren't the ones that could take and they were left, the complaints were that they were left on the curb instead of, you know, gotten into their house. So they were left in, forgotten to be picked up in a shopping mall, and they had pictures of the constituents who were dropped off at the curb or left, and they said, look, you can see in this picture that this person is not going to make it, you know, from the curb to the door. Could someone just tell me more about that? Because that's different from what Representative Paul is talking about.
Ms. Gordon?
Senator Laurie, those were difficult pictures for us to see, and we called the providers that were showing those pictures into the department, and our assistant commissioner and myself and a number of us met with them and pleaded with them to give us the names or ID numbers of those clients so that we could follow up with the broker. And I need to be candid with you, they would not give us the names. They simply would not do it. We were never able to get to the bottom of whether or not those were MNET trips. And what we wanted the names, of course, for is because we wanted to deal with the broker, and we wanted to say, did this happen? When did this happen? How did this happen? These people should be disciplined. And we could not get the information from the providers. We must have asked 10 times in that meeting, including the assistant commissioner. So I have to say that those pictures, we were never able to verify them, and we were never able to clean up whatever situation they may have represented. And that was not pleasing to the department.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Paul.
And to follow up, I think we're all human, and I think we all know that mistakes are going to be made on level of need determinations. There is a process to correct them quite quickly, or it's supposed to be quickly. So, and that's through the broker and the coordinator that is to do that, and through a nurse. There's an appeals process. But mistakes are going to be made. Again, the question is, how many are being made? We really don't know exactly, and we'd like to be able to get a handle on that. If it's happening frequently, that's a big problem. If it's infrequent, then it's something we ought to be able to get a handle on. But I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where these LO level of need determinations are going to be perfect 100% of the time. But what we need to do is make sure that we do get it right as quickly as possible.
Senator Bergen?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, go on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Representative Paul could answer this. What was the reasoning? What is our reason for having a broker anyway? Is that are we trying? Does that help us save? Are we saving money by that? Have we had some savings, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Paul, yes, we've booked considerable savings. Okay. And I think Ms. Cota gave me kind of a hint there in terms of the change we've seen, and I think Representative Paul spoke to the fact that in some cases, in many cases, we're seeing people using which I think you've got even a different acronym now, alternative transportation that's less expensive, more appropriate, more accessible. So the theory seemed pretty sound, both from a cost savings as well as better access. But there's been implementation problems, I think, admittedly, and it's been pretty horrendous for a while.
Mr. Chairman, now the broker that we're using is down in Kansas City, isn't it,
Ms. Carter, was the...
Mr. Chair and representatives, the broker that we're using, the corporation is from Missouri. The office is in St. Paul. It's over by the off of Snelling, and they employ about 20 full-time Minnesota citizens. It's a Minnesota office.
Right.
All Minnesota people, all Minnesota drivers, dispatchers, manager, nurses, the whole nine yards. They're all Minnesota people.
So, Mr. Chairman, so then, Ms. Cota, then it's all kind of coordinated out of that St. Paul office. It isn't coordinated out of the Missouri office, then I would assume, then.
Ms. Cota?
Representative Coring and Mr. Chair, that's correct. The only thing that, I mean, they do use the Missouri system as backup on their systems and their billing, but no, the work is done by Minnesota workers.
Okay.
Thank you. Good question, members. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I did skip over one section that I wanted the department to review with us, and this is same article, and it would be House Article 8, and has to do with MA surcharge and provider withholding. So there's somebody from the department could review that quickly with us. I'm picking some of these because at least it indicated in the chart that I have, it doesn't. These are sections that are not costing money. I don't know if this one may have some other ingredients to it.
Yeah. Chairman Bradley, Senator Berglund, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rubenstein. I'm a staff attorney with the Department of Human Services. At the present time, a lot of our providers are obligated to pay an annual surcharge for each bed in our program. That amount is set by statute. They're obligated to pay 1/12 of that surcharge each month per bed, and they are billed annually 30 to 45 days in advance of the due date for each installment. And the payment rates that the department provides for these providers take into account this obligation. The vast majority of providers do make these payments on time. However, some providers, for various reasons, do not. And we nevertheless continue to, every couple of weeks, to make payments to them for services provided. At the present time, we don't have a way that is practical, I think, or workable or rapid to stop the bleeding and to make sure and to begin making recoveries for these delinquent payments out of the remittances that we send them. This proposal is intended to address that problem, and it does so by giving the department a right when a provider is more than 2 months delinquent in the payment of their surcharge to offset that delinquency against the payments, the stream of payments that we make for services provided. The right to offset is not to be used until after the provider has been given the notice. That includes the amount of the delinquency, the amount of the withholding, a notice of their right to informally and formally appeal the withholding, and an indication of whether the department is going to withhold future installments of surcharge so that it paid as due. It also gives the provider and the department the latitude to informally discuss the issue and arrive at a mutually agreeable resolution of the matter. In the event that the provider is not happy with what the department is proposing, the provider has a right to file an appeal of the department's decision in Ramsey County District Court within 30 days of the date that they get the notice, and the hearing on their appeal must be held no later than 45 days after the appeal is filed and served. And that is the proposal, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Senator Burton?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rubenstein, how delinquent are people? I mean, how big of a problem is this?
Mr. Rubenstein?
All right. Chairman Bradley and Senator Berglund, I'd like to ask that if
Mr. Held is in the audience,
that he address that issue.
Mr. Held, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm Bob Held from the Department of Human Services. And Senator Berglund, the most recent report summarizing past due surcharges was for April of 2005, and the nursing home amounts past due were $1,691,000. They've been fluctuating up and down from about 2 million for the last year or so. That includes 30 facilities in April that were past due. Four of them are what we would consider uncollectible because the facilities have gone into bankruptcy, and those amounts cannot be challenged in those four cases, or the facilities closed, the operators gone, and there's no way to get at it. That would account for about 750,000 of that. There's another couple facilities that have amounts that have gone on for a long period of time. In one case, there's a in these two, there's a bankruptcy that there will be some money collected from the assets that were remaining. There's about 500,000 there, and most of the rest of the facilities that have past due are between 1 and 3 months past due.
Senator Bergman.
Mr. Held, is this need to pay the surcharge in some cases kind of the straw that's breaking the camel's back in terms of forcing a bankruptcy?
Mr. Held?
Well, there's four bankruptcies that have actually been filed, and in the case of one of them, in the case of three of them, there was all kinds of issues with out-of-state ownership. The facilities were actually, from what we can understand from our audits, were profitable, and they were using money from Minnesota profits to acquire additional facilities in Arizona and other states, Utah and so forth. The fourth case where there's a bankruptcy was a facility that was in a lot of difficulty having to do with sex offenders and so forth. You may have heard of the case.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Held, I ask this question in all deadly seriousness. I know there are facilities where this has been the deciding factor, because they have to pay this surcharge on beds that they are not, you know, that they do not get to collect any of the money from anybody. They just have to pay it to us because the law requires them to, and, you know, the bed may not be occupied, the bed might be a Medicare bed, the bed might not be a private pay or an MA bed. And so in those cases, they are having to pay this, and it does tend to have somewhat of a disproportionate impact on facilities that have a disproportionate number of Medicare clients, for example, where they can't get Medicare to pay them an additional amount in order to make this payment. It just has to come out of their bottom line.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berlin, I believe you're absolutely right. And the question I was responding to had to do with bankruptcies, and I'm only aware of those four bankruptcies. But I suspect that where there's low occupancy or high Medicare portion, that you're absolutely right, that the amount that they're collecting from Medicaid and private pay is not going to cover the cost to them of the surcharge. Under federal law, there can't be a hold harmless, and that's why it was designed the way it was. But I suspect that that there have been a number of cases where low occupancy in particular led to closure simply because, you know, that the surcharge was a important factor in that. I think it's also resulted in a number of facilities closing beds that were not occupied, because when they put the bed in layaway or close it, they not only get some incentives, but they don't have to pay the surcharge.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Held, does the department forecast receiving 100% of the surcharge revenues? Is 100% in the forecast, or is the forecast include some acknowledgement of an inability to collect all of it?
Mr. Held?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I'd have to speculate on that. I'm wondering if there's somebody here that is more familiar with that detail.
I don't see any heads going the right way here.
Well, Mr. Held, maybe, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Held, perhaps if there's anyone here who can answer that today, you could get that answer for us.
Senator Holman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Held, I don't know if you can answer this either, but maybe you could get this information to us. How much revenue does come from the surcharge to the state?
Mr. Held?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sullen, I would have to speculate on that. There's a distinction between the amount of revenue that's paid in the surcharge and the net gain that the state experiences because of the surcharge. And I believe that the net gain is about $75 million a year. The net revenue would be about 2,815 times the number of beds, which would be about 36,500 beds. So if somebody happened to have a calculator, David's pulling one out, and could multiply 37,500 times 2,815, you'd have your revenue answer.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sullen.
Mr. Held, why the difference between what is paid and what the actual gain is to the state?
Mr. Held?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sullen, when the surcharge was enacted, and there's been three or four components to it, in each case, there was a rate adjustment that was given to facilities. And so, for example, in 2003, when the surcharge went up $5 per bed per day, which was, it almost tripled the total value of this, there was a rate increase given to nursing homes of $5.56 per resident day. And the difference there was to, in general, recognize that there are vacant bed days and Medicare days that don't pay the surcharge. There was a recognition at the time that about 58% of nursing homes would recover, in fact, less off of that surcharge increase than what they had to pay in. The other facilities would recover almost exactly the same or a little bit more. But because the rating increase was only 10% greater, 11% greater, the fact was that some facilities would not recover. Majority of facilities would not fully recover their costs. So the state experiences a cost in having the surcharge because Medicaid pays this additional portion of the rate. However, the state's payments are half state share and half federal share, and then private paying people also pay the surcharge. And so that's why there's a net gain to the state, but there's also a cost to the state and a difference between the revenues and the net.
Thank you.
Do we have a number?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, the number based on the figures that Mr. Held provided would be $105.5 million of total revenue.
So, Mr. Chair, the estimate that I gave you of about $75 million is about right as the net gain.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Chairman. Senator Coyne.
Before, if you'd allow me 45 seconds before if we're not done with Mr. Rubenstein, I just want to say that, you know, each of us as members, we get constituent services or constituent problems in our district, and I've had to call on Mr. Rubenstein many times, and I thank you privately, but I want to thank you publicly in front of everybody. You are a fine state employee, and you've helped me out tremendously and my constituents. I just want to say thanks a lot. You're a great asset to the state, and I really appreciate it, Mr. Rubenstein.
Thank you, Senator.
And that was a paid advertisement there, if you care to. But I concur absolutely without even paying that Mr. Rubenstein is a fine example of a public servant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bergman, you had a something at noon or so that you needed to be to?
If possible.
Okay. Well, let's try one more article, and we may not have the time to go through it in detail, but Article 4 has a number of sections that deal with rate exceptions, moratorium exceptions, ICFMR reconfigurations, and so forth. First of all, we'll have an amendment passed out. I think this has been in my folder. It's a technical amendment, but we'll wait for that to get passed out so members have it in hand, and I think one of our staff will explain that to us. And then I think we also have a side-by-side to try to summarize all these so we can pass out that out as well. We'll wait a moment here until the amendment gets around to people.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment that's being passed out right now amends a section on page R77 of the revisor side-by-side. It's the language in House Section 25, which relates to provider rate increases, and this is a technical amendment that was suggested by DHS. My understanding is that it specifically relates to the alternative care and elderly waiver programs, which have rate limits established for the services that are authorized by counties.
Ms. Moore, what is it? It looks like all you're doing is adding the phrase "or rate limits as applicable." What's kind of the effect
yes,
of doing
sir,
that?
That's correct. I believe it's just so that the rate increases can also go towards the alternative care and elderly waiver programs as well.
All members have the copy of the amendment. I think this was just a technical amendment that's been sitting in my folder for a while here. It just hadn't been processed, so we thought we'd process it today.
Mr. Chairman, did you say this is a technical amendment?
Senator Coyne, that's correct.
Okay. I would move that if you...
Senator Coyne moves Amendment A84. Any discussion to that amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, what is the effect of adding that language?
You know, try it again. The question was, again, what the effect of that additional phrase is.
Mr. Chair and Senator Solon, it's my understanding that this language needs to be added because the elderly waiver and alternative care programs have payment rate limits that are established and not specific rates for the services that counties authorize.
Is there someone from Department of Services that an accurate representation of this? Any further elaboration? Senator Solon, does that satisfy your question? Okay. I mean, the case, are there no
I'll move the amendment.
Senator Coyne had moved the amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We have motion for us on Amendment A84. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And then,
is this banana?
Okay. And it was just out of respect to the time, I asked to have this document that long-term care facility provisions, Senate's Article 4 and 5, House Articles 4 and 5, to be sort of created. It makes it a little bit easier to make comparisons. There are a lot of differences between the House and Senate. There are some, I think, that, well, there's a lot of them where we're very similar, but there are some differences. So I think we're tight enough on time. If Senator Bergman, if you need to be someplace by noon, my original intent had been to have staff sort of walk through this for us, and I'll sort of leave it to your discretion if you want to hold off and do that later or just allow members to review this, because I do want to respect your commitment as well. Any recommendations, Senator Bergman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we could take it up tomorrow.
That'd be fine. Sure.
And people can look it over in the meantime. So well,
members will be sure to bring this back tomorrow when we meet.
And then, Senator Berger, let me just ask, in Article 4, and it would be in, actually, House Article 5, Section 33, there's an issue that we have had discussion before on dental access for persons with disabilities, and that was a non-money item. We didn't get a chance to get to that yesterday. Is the Senate prepared to move on that and accept that?
Representative Bradley, I think what we would like to do is to have a discussion of a broader discussion of the dental issues and problems that we're facing, and we perhaps could do that tomorrow also. I think it would take a little longer than we have. I'm available.
That could be, Senator Bergman. The only reason I bring it up is that when that question was raised, because we did adopt yesterday a section on a dental issue that was with the board about the dental director that Representative Aber had. And at the time, I think Representative Wilkin asked about this particular section, and you had mentioned that we'll get to it later. We just didn't quite get to it. That's why I'm bringing it up today. I thought that this one appeared to be fairly clean without money and just on a specific axis within a specific group, and that's the disability group. But if your preference would be to hold off, I will respect that.
Yeah.
Given that, members, well, I think we could... We have a couple of others, and I'll try to review those with you, Senator Bergman, about some others that I think that we could talk about in the future meeting, but we'll bring those up. We have in Article 6, I think the Department of Human Services has a number of sections with deal with residency proposal and GA recipients and applying for maintenance benefits from the federal level and SSI conversions and back claims. That maybe we can also bring up tomorrow or in subsequent meetings. Given the time and where we are, I think that we'll conclude today's meeting and again ask members to bring along the long-term care comparison that we can then do in our next meeting tomorrow. And Senator Bergman, if you would like to announce to people our time for that meeting.
Yes, we'll meet tomorrow at 1 p.m. in room 123 at the Capitol.
One p.m.
Yes, I believe the Senate goes into session at 11, so give us a chance to do that and have lunch or whatever. And
with that, we're done.